Hello, my name is Brainerd Carey. Today we're talking about setbacks and rejection in the art studio and how to manage that on a number of levels. This is produced by myself, Brainerd Carey. I'm an educator and an author of two books, Making It in the Art World and New Markets for Artists, both books on professional practice for artists. And Pearl Paint is supporting this and sponsoring this talk so that you can have these tools to manage your career and hopefully find them useful. Okay, today's topic is about setbacks, and this is something that we all know, and it's a very real physical issue as well as an emotional issue for all of us. Because in the business world, setbacks and rejections would be difficult. It's not easy being, let's say, a salesman, saleswoman, salesperson, knocking on door to door and getting rejected all the time and moving forward. But it's not quite as personal as it is for artists, because you're getting rejected for what you're making as well. I understand that as an artist and as an educator, because I also have a practice and have experienced rejection and setbacks. But to begin with, I want to talk about an example of something, a story I was once told. I worked for a nonprofit in New York City. I was teaching, actually, a video editing program for a good nonprofit agency, which there are tons of in New York, and they all help artists in different ways and have juries and give out grants and awards. You probably all have heard of some nonprofits, no matter what city you're in, your local arts council, or if you're in Europe, there's an arts office that has connections to different groups that are helping artists in different ways through grants or classes, and you have to apply for them. Well, I was teaching at this one institute, and they were, again, I was teaching video editing, and there was two ways you could become part of the institute, this nonprofit, and this is the case in many of them. Either by applying, you could apply for a residency, a grant, and they give you time working in their studio to develop multimedia projects, or you could pay for studio time. It wasn't too expensive, but it wasn't cheap either. You could pay for time to work in their studio and develop things. This is the case in, you know, ceramic studios, papermaking studios. This one just happened to be video making. So the director of the nonprofit was talking to me one day after I had taught a class, and I was asking her just about different teachers there and grants and how the whole place was running, and she said, "You know, I feel so bad for this one artist, because," she said, "he has applied to us and we've rejected him." Now listen to this story closely. I think it's just fascinating and very instructional in a way. She said, "Look, here's a guy who went to the," she said, "he's an artist, a great artist who works with sound and paint and really interesting guy. He's paid for studio time here year after year. He does projects here with his own money," and she said, "we really want to give him, you know, a grant of studio time, and he's applied for a grant." And she said, "we give out grants twice a year." And she said, "and every time he applies, he's rejected." And she said, "but the really painful thing is he hasn't applied once or twice. He's applied 5 times in a row and we've rejected him." And she said, and we all know him here. He knows all of us." And I said, "well, how could that happen? If all of you know him and he's an artist that you like, how could he get rejected so many times?" And she said, "because the way all nonprofits are set up is so it can't be about who you know. He does know everyone here, and he happens to be a great artist." She said, "but there's always enough people on the committee, people who are not involved directly in the arts from the community and the business community as well as the non-business community." She said that every time he does a proposal, there are other artists that they simply like more, and they get voted in. So she said, you know, in one way it shows that the jury system really does work. So why am I telling this story? Because here's a guy who applied 5 times and is trying not to take it personally and keeps doing it. And I'm sure if it was me or one of you, we'd be thinking the whole time, what am I doing wrong? Is there someone who doesn't like me there? And the inside knowledge is everybody loves him there. It was that however his project is being presented, however he's talking about his art, it's appealing to some people, but not everyone. And the jury process is something that is truly democratic in most situations in nonprofits, because that's how that's how they're regulated and designed to be run. So there can't be cronyism and just getting your friends in kind of thing. The reason I think this story is important is because he was suffering a lot of setbacks and rejection, as many of you might, at the hands of nonprofits or any place where you apply to. I've given you a list of worldwide opportunities that came with this talk, and if you apply to many of them, you'll get rejected by some of them, and hopefully you'll get accepted by others. But you have to understand that the process of being accepted or rejected is one that is democratic and not one to take personally. Just as this guy applied 5 times, you should continue applying, and one time you will get in. Before I move on to other techniques of just how to manage different types of rejection, specifically not hearing back from somebody, I want to say that I think it's very important to recognize that since a jury is, as I'm saying and believe, is often in a quite democratic position, meaning that there are community members and others who pick work out, not necessarily even because it has the best aesthetics or particular criteria, but because it appeals to someone or several people who are not in the arts community. Now think about what that means exactly. I remember talking to the head of the sculpture department at Yale once, who said, "Oh my gosh, I was on a local committee to pick a piece of public art, and they picked the worst piece of public art. I'm never going to do that again." What does that mean? That means she was a powerful person who was on the jury, was actually outweighed by other local people in the community. So what that also means, and this is a side tip, that when applying to things that involve a committee, like grants, like residencies, like many of the opportunities that were emailed along with this teleseminar, that when applying for things like that, you have to write not in a way that sounds too intellectual or too academic, not art speak. You know, it has to be very clear and very understandable, so that if you're talking to somebody who knows nothing at all about art, and I really mean nothing about art, they'll get what you're doing and they'll smile and they'll think, "Oh, I like that." That's how direct things have to be. They have to sound like you're talking to, you know, not down to somebody, not like you're talking to a child, but, you know, not that you should even talk down to a child, of course, but in a way that is very clear, that's very, could be dynamic and interesting, but in a way that's crystal clear, the way you'd read about it in a listing almost, in a newspaper, if you want to be more generic, so that anybody who may want to understand your work can understand it in 3 sentences. Just a side tip, I think that's probably why that guy got rejected so many times. He's been in a lot of museums and was a well-known artist, but I think he's talking too much about how important he thinks the work is, perhaps, and is talking about issues that are a little too sophisticated for most, whereas he's competing against projects that may be very sincere and straightforward, and those tend to win out in grant situations. The other thing I want to talk about in this talk, which will be another 5 or 10 minutes, is how to follow up with somebody when you don't hear from them. This is one of the biggest questions that I field as I consult with artists on a personal one-to-one basis, which I do, and as part of the school that I've built, is people ask me and they say, "Brainerd, I've sent my slides to this guy, I've sent JPEGs to this person, and they're not responding, and they asked me to send something. What do I do if I don't hear back from somebody?" Or people don't ask me that at all, but that is what's happening sometimes as well. But I also get asked that a lot. I know people are dealing with it whether they ask me or not. You call someone, you write to someone, maybe you want to have a meeting with them, which is something I suggest all the time in my talks and books, or maybe you want them to look at your work, and you send them a letter, and they don't write back to you. You imagine the worst, that you sent them a JPEG, or you didn't, but for whatever reason, they're not interested in you. I have to say emphatically, and I can't overemphasize enough, that when someone doesn't respond, that is by no means a no, that you deserve an answer, yes or no, to your question, no matter what it is, even if it's, "What do you think of my work?" Not that I suggest you write to people and say that, but if you're asking a question like a meeting or to be included in the gallery, or if you're asking a gallery what their submission policy is, you deserve an answer. So here's how to follow up, and this is very important. This is just a professional method that anybody can use, and it's the method that business people use and professionals use all over the world. You write to somebody, and you say, I'm calling to request a meeting, or I'd like to talk to you about gallery representation, or I'd like to ask how your gallery looks at new artists, or if they do look at new artists. But let's say you're just writing to say, I'm writing because I'd like to have a meeting with you. Whatever it is, after you write to them, at the end of that email, say, if I don't hear from you within 2 days, I'll follow up with a call. Or an email if you don't have their number, but you should be able to get just about everybody's number. You send an email. You wait 3 days. You follow up, and you call them. And on the call, let's say you get their voicemail. You say, hi, I'm calling to follow up from an email that I sent about how to apply to your gallery, for example, let's say. And then at the end of that voicemail, you say, this is my number. Please call me back or return my email at your earliest convenience. And if I don't hear from you, I'll send you a follow-up email after this call. And then you go back and forth. I do it twice a week if I'm following somebody. And I know this may be difficult, sound difficult, but it is the professional way. And to professionals, it shows that you're really interested in meeting them. And there's nothing wrong with reminding people because they all have piles of email that seems to just stream into their inboxes endlessly. Is the state of our society today. So it's follow-up. It's call, phone. And at the end of every message, always to stay in control is really the reason for this. Say, I will follow this up with a call or an email. And you continue to do that until you get an answer. A yes or a no is what you deserve. And I think that's how to manage rejection. I'm going to give you one example there because I think this is a powerful one. I was, not long ago, after I came out with the first book, I have talks. I give talks in many art councils and art centers across the country. And I was calling a local library in New Haven, Connecticut, where I was living at the time. And someone told me, oh, you should speak to this woman there. She does public programs on local authors and you should see if you can give a talk there. So I said, sure, of course I do it for free. I went to the library. I said, can I speak to so-and-so? I'd like to give a talk. They called her, and she said, oh, I'm very busy. I can't come up. And I said, well, I'm here in the library. And she said, I'm sorry, I'm too busy. You have to send me an email. So I sent her an email, and the email said I'd like to give a free talk at the library for artists about professional development. And I have a book on the subject. Didn't hear back from her at all. I thought, that's strange. So I called her. Said, I'll follow up. Nothing. Email, call. I did just what I'm saying. This went on for 2 weeks, and I was sending 2-3 emails a week. Sometimes I do it more than I'm saying. And one day, and this is often what I do, I got frustrated, and I started calling several times during the day and hanging up when the voicemail picked up. Finally, she picked up after maybe I called 4 or 5 times. One day. And I said, hi, I've been sending you letters and Brainerd. I'm trying to give a free talk. Oh, yes, sorry. She said, I'm so busy. Send it again. It'll get to the top of the heap. I'm just so busy. And nothing personal. I said, okay. I sent her the letter again. And then I called her right up, right after that, 5 minutes later. Did you get it? Oh, yes, I got it. It's right here. Oh, looks wonderful. Sure. Let's set up something right now. And she set up a lecture with me there on the phone, a date for about 2 months from then. This was the local library. I mean, I'm giving you this example because she wasn't a curator at a fancy museum or an important university. This was a local library. People are overworked, they're busy, and it was that hard to get through to her. So I think it's important to keep those kind of things in mind when you get caught up in rejection or somebody writing back. Usually 99.9% of the time, it has nothing to do with your work, your letter, who you are, where you're from, anything about you. It has to do with the fact that they're just too busy to look through all their emails. They don't recognize you, so it doesn't go to the top. They don't pick it up. My advice there, of course, is to continue to follow up, as I've been saying. Phone call, email, and maybe on one day repetitive phone calls. I know that sounds crazy, but we all deserve an answer, I believe, very strongly, and that's the way to get one. Rejection, of course, is an emotional process, and it takes us all down a notch, and I understand that, and I don't have an answer for how to manage through that, how to manage the slings and arrows that affect our spirits and can bring us down, other than to do what we physically must do. You know, we all have ways of weathering what that is, that ability to withstand a certain kind of letdown when we don't get the response we'd like. But the answer in this case is to physically and behaviorally rather move forward, to continue to do what's needed to do. And in this case, it's to follow up, it's to apply again, it's to realize that you deserve an answer, and also that the reason people get rejected is not always because the work isn't good or not, it's how it's presented to a whole committee who may not be all artists. So keep both of those things in mind and remember to follow up, because you deserve an answer no matter what it is, yes or no. Silence should never be taken as a way to end a dialogue or a potential dialogue with anyone. Just this year, I pursued someone for quite a long time, was to get into the Venice Biennial. It was the director a top curator at the New Museum in New York. I wrote quite a bit. Eventually, I did hear from him, and he said, I'm traveling in Europe, and the process is closed right now. But I went back and forth through numerous emails till I did get an answer. And though I would have liked a different answer, I was satisfied to get that answer. And that's how I manage not hearing from somebody, is finding a way to get through politely and consistently. Thank you all for tuning in for this talk. You can send me emails anytime you want. My name is Brainerd Carey, and my email is my full name at gmail.com, which is BRAINARDCAREY@gmail.com. I will also email this recording to you. Thank you again for tuning in, and I wish you the best of luck with your career. And thank you once again. Feel free to ask me questions, and have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.